What up, what up, what up? It's Pope the Blueprint, the host of the number one networking show. And I like to take the first couple of seconds of each show to highlight any local brands that I may be wearing. And tonight I am wearing XI11, which is a local 17-year-old entrepreneur here in Baltimore. So I encourage everyone to support your local brands. Now we have a special guest in the virtual building tonight. How you feeling tonight?
I'm good. I'm so excited. I've been waiting for this ever since we set it up. I was like, I can't forget. I'm on it. I got to be ready. And I'm ready.
And I appreciate that. And you definitely delivered. And I'm excited to get into the journey. And so before we get into the journey, the inspiration, and where you are today, if you can just introduce yourself, let everybody know where you're from, and just a brief overview of what you do, and we get ready to take it back to day one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, my name is Kanisha Broussard, and I am a writer. That is what I am. That's who I've always been, even when I denied that I was that. So I am originally from Chicago, but I live in Houston now. I have four boys. I initially had three, and those boys being in Chicago is what brought me to Houston to put them in a safer place. So they range in age. I have a 30-year-old, a 26-year-old, a 22-year-old, and a 3-year-old. So my day job is I am an English professor. So I teach students how to not hate writing as much as they do when they come to me. And sometimes I get really lucky and I can teach a couple of them how to love writing. And that's pretty much where I am. That's how my journey started. My journey really, really, really started when my father was dying. And I was 31. And I was in undergrad at the time at Chicago State University. And I was in a writing program and I was surrounded by writers. Some of them were poets. There's one named Dr. Randall Horton now. He's Dr. Now. We were into school together and we were all inspiring each other. But I hadn't embraced being a writer yet because there wasn't no money in it, you know? So it was like that I can't do that because there ain't no money in it. Then I got the call that my dad was dying, and my dad lived in Ohio, and I didn't like him at all. So I thought, until I got that call. And when I got the call, I hit the road, dropped everything, dropped everybody, got on the road I had never been to a hospital. I didn't know where it was at. And I had to get to that man. When I left him, he had not passed away yet. I was back in Chicago. At the time, I was married to my second husband. And I started writing something called Death Came Bearing Gifts. And it was a way for me to deal with the fact that in my young mind, it was he got out of what he owed me again, you know? And I had to come to terms with that. So what started out as a 22-page, let me find some kind of sense in what doesn't make sense, ended up being my current manuscript called Daddy Issues, which is set for publication on February the 3rd. And that's who I am.
That's a journey, right? That is a journey because you said a lot. And so the title, take us into the title, and that'll kind of lead us back to kind of that very inspiration. What's the title again of the memoir?
The title is Daddy Issues.
Why why Daddy Issues? Take us in. What does that title mean for you?
For me, it's authentic. And it encompasses the ugly and the pretty. You know, we all want, almost all girls, all women want to be daddy's little girl, right? So we have that daddy part in there. But when we don't have him, no matter how much we try to deny it, when he's around, when he's there, when he walks around, but he chooses not to be involved for whatever reason, we all end up with daddy issues. We do. And those daddy issues may, they may manifest in who we choose as a partner, as like they did for me. They may manifest in how much we give or how much we take, as they did for me. So with my father's death came my realization that I had a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of wasn't pretty. They were all issues, from the ex-husbands that I chose. I am on husband number three. To how I raise my children. I have four boys. To what I valued, what I didn't value, the girls I listened to, the girls I didn't listen to. Every decision I made was so closely connected to the relationship I had with my dad. And every decision was tainted. Everyone was tainted. With every decision, there was unfinished business all the time. And I had to sit down and have a really, really hard look at myself and determine how much longer that was going to go on. So that's how the title came to be. I wanted people to know, and there was another title. It was going to be Our Dance, a Daughter Father Thing. But that just wasn't right. We weren't that. We didn't do a dance. He had issues. I had issues. And it had to be daddy issues.
Now, did you ever have a conversation with him? You know, when you did go see him, because I don't know how close the relationship was up to that point. But did you have a conversation to try to resolve at least that some type of void that was in your life?
Yeah. You know how sometimes we do things and we know we do them for other people or to other people or with other people, but we know we're really doing them for ourselves, right? Yeah. When my dad was dying and he died of cancer, and it was a slow death. By the time I reached him, I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't know if he knew who I was. It had gotten to his brain, and we just don't know. One day he might remember, the next day he might not. My dad couldn't speak. Part of his throat had been removed. But had it not been for me being able to tell him how I felt while he was lying there, I don't think I would be the same woman today. Mm-hmm. Now, I got a chance to tell him, I got a chance to hold him accountable, but to also hold myself accountable. And I got a chance to tell him I loved him, despite what he wasn't, despite what he couldn't be, despite what he couldn't do. I got a chance to tell him that I loved him. It wasn't perfect. It was far from perfect. And I look back at that and I think about, there's a part in the book that talks about how he loved Westerns. And we were in the hospital room and I was sitting next to his bed and he was incoherent. I knew he was incoherent. I was just kind of waiting for anything to happen, a twitch or something. And I had the Westerns on the television. I was watching soap operas actually. And I was like, that's not right. I don't know if he don't like soap operas. I was like, that's kind of foul. Right. For me to watch soap operas, right? So I changed it to the Westerns, and I will never ever forget, Bishop, his hospital bed started shaking. It's kind of started moving around. And I turned around and I looked, and he was just looking dead at me. He was looking dead at me. And I said, Daddy. And he just looked. He couldn't talk. He just looked. And I said, Daddy. And I went up to him and I hugged what I could. And I just told him, I said, I love you. I said, I love you. I said, I know you have to leave. I said, but I could not let you go without telling you I'm sorry and I love you. And I told him, I said, I shouldn't have left you. I said, you left me too. And you were the daddy, but I shouldn't have left you. So when I think back to the conversation we had when he was coherent, right before he left for Ohio, I'll never forget, he called me and he was like, and I never got a call from my dad, never. So I'm angry, angry Black woman, that was me. Pissed Black woman, that was me. Bitter, that was me. So I'm answering the phone and he's like, hey, I'm like, what do you want? I'm busy, what do you want? Mm. And he said, you never call me. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Mm. As many times as I reached out to you way back when, I never call you. I said, Daddy, I don't have time for this. And he said, well, you know, you never say, hey, Dad, forget you, Dad. I love you, Dad. I said, hey, Dad, forget you, Dad. I love you, Dad. Are we done?
Mm.
And I'll never forget, at some point in time in that conversation, I said, do you have any idea how many men I looked to looking for you? I said, do you have any idea? And he just said, I'm sorry. That was the only time my father had ever just said, I'm sorry.
Now, did that mean anything to you at that moment?
Yes, because he was always a but person. Hey, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm sorry, but so-and-so, but if your mom, that was the first time there was never a but. There wasn't a but, there wasn't a, well, if he just, I heard it. It was all he could do. It was all he could say. He couldn't give.
Now, was that the kind of, start, did you know, was that kind of the start of the healing process at that moment?
No, I didn't know it at that moment.
Okay.
I did not. I think I was too angry. I recognized it. Yes. I thought it was genuine, but it in my mind, I'm like, it's too late for that. You know, damage is done. I'm 31 years old. I'm with husband number two. I ain't got no business with him. I ain't got no business with him. I'm three babies in. I ain't got no business with him. You know, what is your I'm sorry going to do for me now? Really? What? I was too angry. It wasn't until I got that call that he was actually dying. And they said he might make it 36 hours, maybe.
Wow.
That's when I knew. I literally fell to my knees in the middle of my kitchen.
Now that you had a decision to make, because you still could have been angry enough not to go. Did that ever cross your mind not to go?
No. I had to get to my daddy. No matter what wasn't done, no matter what he wasn't, I had to get to my daddy. And I had to realize my decisions were my own, you know? Those two marriages, he didn't do that. I did that, you know?
Yeah.
So no, there was never a point where I was like, whatever. Yeah. Not after I got the call.
That's honorable. That's very honorable. And then at that moment, right, that you said you took accountability, because it was at the moment, was it that you apologized or was it that you forgave him? Which one? I think you said you forgave him.
I think I forgave my dad the moment I started hitting the road. Because nothing mattered. At that point, nothing mattered. Before I even got to that hospital room, I forgave him.
Wow.
One of the things I had to realize, when I got to the hospital room, I needed him to know I loved him. I could not let my dad die and not tell him that I loved him. But loving him and forgiving him came way before I got to the hospital room.
Wow.
I just needed him to know it. I felt like he deserved that. My dad had his own issues. And when I became a grown woman, I was able to understand that, yes, he was my father, but he was a man. And there are things that went into making him before I was even an idea. So I had to respect that, you know, and not take it personal.
So what was that? What was like the journey of now self-accountability, right? Because like you said, up to that point, the angry Black woman, pissed Black woman, and then at that spiritual exchange of forgiveness, And once that broke loose,
yeah.
Like where do you go to start taking accountability now? Because I'm sure some decisions you made based on the unforgiveness and the anger you had, like you said, you were on husband number two, you yeah. were searching for your dad. I'm sure like as you were raising your son, I don't know what that conversation or exchange was, right? Because some women are angry and can take it out on the kids. What did you ever kind of had to now apologize to the oldest? Because you said the oldest is like 30, so he's grown. Yeah. He's the leader of his journey now. Did you had to go back and mend some things with the kids now?
That's a great question. I will say that I did have to go mend things, but not things that directly affected them. What I had to apologize for was my shortcomings as a woman and as a mother. Not being able to, for instance, I got married the first time when I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And my first son came from that marriage. Well, when it came time for us to go our separate ways, I never spoke against his father to him, never. That my mother was not that kind of woman. We never speak against the fathers to the sons, ever. But I made the mistake of not choosing a good role model for his stepfather.
Okay.
I had to apologize for that. I had to apologize for not being solid enough and whole enough to put me and my first son first before my infatuation with somebody who was cute.
So pause right there for a second, because I literally just had a conversation with someone. And they didn't even know who I was interviewing, but they were just kind of talking about their situation and the sacrifices that they're making to keep their younger one protected, right? What kind of advice would you give to women that may be in the situation of daddy issues, not having a father around, you know, maybe going to another relationship and maybe some sacrifices or some things to look out for and going into another relationship when you have kids?
Yeah, that I will say that most women who have that void of a father, and my husband and I, we talk about this now, when your father passes away, and you don't have a dad for that reason, that's a completely different boy. You know, you can picture your dad in heaven and you're doing things to make him proud, right? You have the sky is the limit with what you think your relationship would have been with your dad. But when your dad is not around because he can't be, he doesn't want to be, it's not in him. The relationship with mom is bad, whatever the case is. That creates a very fragmented woman, whether we want to admit it or not. We just don't want to admit it, but it does. It creates a woman who does not have a male role model to show her how she should be treated, or to show her how she should be thinking, or to make her understand a value for her as a person. You have to fix yourself first. You have to have those hard, hard conversations, reflect on things that you have done in your past that you may not have done if things were different. Reflect on the people that you surrounded yourself with, which you may not have if you were whole. When you have a child, you have to work on yourself first. You don't have a choice. It's no longer there. And when you work on yourself and then you realize you have to protect your child, because you do, you have that responsibility, no matter how it came about, to protect everything that child has access to. So you have to date differently. You have to date very, very differently. And it's no longer about if he's cute or if he's tall or if he's the kind of man I want. Then it's about, what is he going to teach my child? What is my child going to see? How is my child going to see him talk to me? Mm. What's going to happen when we are in an adverse situation? How is he going to respond? Those are the things that we have to go into relationships thinking. And those are the things we don't. We go into it for ourselves, you know, what we like, how we feel, you know, how he looks, what he does. And then if my kid likes him.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. You have to picture your child 18. And what has that person, what influence has that person been on your child? It may not be a stepfather influence. It may be a friend, but it has to be a non-good friend, right? Because that's your responsibility.
Now, what would you say on the reverse side to the men, right? Because it's a certain level of patience that you have to have, because sometimes women, their actions will display one thing, but they're really yearning for something else. Do you have any advice just from a woman perspective? Like when a woman does this, she's really saying this and you should be more patient. I don't know, because I'm just thinking of from a male's perspective, you know, when you see a woman and you notice she has daddy issues, because there's certain things that we notice like, wow, I can just tell that her dad wasn't around by how harsh she tries to speak about certain things or try to tear a man down sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice from your experience, maybe a nugget or two that maybe like, brother, just be more patient, or what would you say to the male part there?
I would say be more patient if you can hold her accountable. And she responds in a mature way. Because sometimes patience can also be enabling.
Mm.
You know, if you are involved, if a man is involved with a woman and he sees the signs that she's not whole, and what he sees is that she's not whole because dad wasn't around, or she's mistaken about some ideas, some values, some cultural issues because dad wasn't there to teach her, or because mom talked about dad like crazy, yeah, so he couldn't come around. Whatever her issues are, she will have them. And if a man notices that, he has to hold her accountable. He has to. If he plans on having a life with her, he has to hold her accountable, because it's not fair for him to take the lashes that he didn't earn. It's just not fair. So if he can have those conversations, hold her accountable, and see how she responds. If she responds defensive and she's attacking and he don't know what he's talking about, he has to be realistic too. That might not be the woman for him, because if you can't have a real transparent conversation about what made you a woman and why do you respond the way you respond, and have you really taken a look at some of the things you're saying, if you can't have that genuine conversation, all the patience in the world is not
going to be that. I love that. I love that accountability factor, what you just said. That, you know, that's a real gem, because that would be a true determining factor, the response, the accountability. And I know that'll really bless some people with just sharing that gem and that perspective. Because like you said, patience can be an enabler sometimes.
That's a
gem, right? And then so now you are taking your journey of accountability. Where do you go from here? Does the paper start, or have you written the paper? When did the paper come now? Because you wrote a 22 or 23 page.
Right.
Paper. So that's how it started. Mm-hmm. And then how did it develop into more? Like once you were done the paper, was it incomplete for you, or where did we go from there?
Yep. There was more there. I started to realize that there were things I had forgotten. And I needed to remember the positive things about my dad. It was easy to remember the bad stuff. It was easy to remember he left me. He didn't want to be bothered. That was easy. And that fueled bitterness, right? That fueled anger. It was hard to remember the good times. And I was like, oh yeah, he did do that. Oh yeah, we did. You know, those things were hard because when you remember the good times, you can't hold on to that bitterness so easily. There was more there. There was a lot more there. So what started out as 23 pages actually ended up right now 245 pages.
Wow.
Yeah, 245. And I'll never forget. There are times when I'll be in here and I'm editing or I'm trying to revise a chapter and I'll get on a really rough part and my husband will come in to get his clothes or something and I'll be crying. He'll be like, what's wrong? I'm like, get out, just get out. Because my dad had potential. He tried to be a good man. He did. Mm. But my dad had been an alcoholic since he was 14.
So, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty much a wrap. It was a wrap.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. And I love that you wanted to remember the good times, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, some people wanted, and that did that come along in the journey of accountability now after that changed mentality? Because what was so important about making sure, like making a conscious effort about the good times? What did that truly mean for you?
Well, I realized and had to admit to the fact that I was very comfortable being angry.
Mm.
It was protection. You know, I got you ain't gonna get me because I'm gonna get you first. Right. But I think that when you want better and happiness is better, no matter what that happiness looks like, that happiness can be you by yourself. It could be you with someone else. Happiness is going to look different for every person, but when you truly want happiness, you have to be honest. And you can't just be selective and remember the things that you want to remember. You have to remember it all and let the chips fall where they may. And that's one of the things that happened as I was writing each chapter. It would just start with, what's my memory? What do I remember? And that one thing that I remembered would lead to a more fully developed memory of exactly what that night looked like the night we made angels in the snow in Chicago in the front porch. But he had been gone for like 3 days. But when he came home and told me, let's go outside and make angels in the snow with that little members only jacket on, that was my daddy, you know?
Wow.
And I could not allow anger and hate to have that much power over my happiness and me loving my dad. And it becomes hard when you start to realize that all of those things are valid. The anger is valid. The bitterness is valid, but so is the love. And the love hurts a whole lot more. And it's harder for us to embrace because it hurts.
Yeah.
You know, when something goes wrong, we just want to hold on to all the bad stuff because that makes it easier to move through the day. When I think about some of the things that me and my dad did when I was much younger, one of the things I get caught up in is what if, you know, what if gin hadn't been his favorite drink? You know, what if I had hung in there a little longer? And those what ifs hurt. They really do. But it comes to a point where if you want to be happy truly, you have to be honest truly. And you have to deal with everything that comes. Your stuff, they stuff, your stuff in response to they stuff. Because you can control what you do, but you can't control what they do. You know? It's been a journey.
How important is it for you? Because you're very transparent. You know, on your social media about how you're feeling, you know, as you're writing a chapter, you know, it's like you're taking people on a journey with you, you know, because a lot of people try to hide the emotions, put up a facade, you know, of being heroic, like they don't have emotions. Why is it so important that you share and be so transparent in your day to day as you share with people?
Because I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one. And I think, you know, and this is cliche to say, had I seen somebody else go through it, I would have been more comfortable with myself. But, you know, one of the things that I can truly say is that I do know other people who are going through. My sons are going through it. My sons are having daddy issues. So I can't tell them be strong. And strong, being strong comes with being vulnerable. You can't be strong unless you're also vulnerable. And for me, and I'll just be completely honest. Sometimes if I'm walking down the street or if I'm going to work, in our culture with our people, my looks say everything's been easy, right? My looks say, oh, mother, father, great house, great husband, great car, wonderful children. No, one of my kids is a felon, you know? It hasn't always been rosy. It's been hard. So another thing for me is to just show people, yeah, it's hard, but it's doable. You know, it's rough, it hurts, but there are smiles on the other side of that. And the smiles are deeper and they're richer because it's not fake. Yeah, you know what I went through. Nobody can hold that against me. Nobody can hold that over my head. There's not going to be any surprises. It was rough and I was rough. Now yeah. Let's move on, you know?
Right. I love it because you're just very transparent. And that's what I got when I came across your page. And I was like, I want to have her on the show because it's going to bless a lot of people. And I'm just learning more about you as you share your story. And so I'm excited because the book comes out, you said, in February, right? Scheduled to come out in February. And then what would you like for people, a couple things that you would like people to gather once they read the book? We kind of set them up. Once you read it, what are some takeaways you want people to grab?
There's a huge takeaway for women, especially single moms. And I see this all the time. But one thing I can say about my mother is my mother allowed me to get to know my dad for myself. She never stepped in. She never prevented. And she held herself accountable. I chose that man. I chose your father, right? So it didn't matter that he was an alcoholic for her. She knew he would never hurt me. You know, if it was a matter of me being physically hurt, it wouldn't have happened. But there were many nights I fell asleep on the porch waiting for my dad, and my mama was there to pick me up. She never said, you're not going to wait on that porch for your daddy because he ain't coming. She never said that. I sat on the porch and I waited, and I learned he wasn't coming for myself. And my mama picked me up and put me in my bed. I would like for women to understand that if you chose him, allow him to be a father to his child, whatever that looks like. As long as he's not a threat to the child's well-being, you all may not be together anymore. That has nothing to do with you all's child, because that child is going to grow up and that child needs to be a whole adult, and they need both parents for that, whether y'all like each other or not. That's huge for me. For men, it's how important they are to a little girl or a boy. I mean, the role of a father is so understated in our country, in our culture. It's like, when I see, I've gotten to the point now, I'll be in a gas station and I'll see a man, a Black man, and just out of the blue, I'll go, hey, Black man. And they're like, what? And I go, I love you. And the biggest smile will come on their faces. I'll be parked next to a car and there'd be two guys, two brothers in the car. And I'll just look up and I'll be like, hey, Black man. And be like, what? I'll be like, I love you. We do not celebrate our Black fathers and Black men nearly as passionately as we need to, because they are, no matter how much money we make, no matter how elevated we are in our careers, we can't do it without these fathers. We can't. And that's the one thing I hope people take away, is how important a dad is to who we become.
I'm thinking of something as you're speaking, because Father's Day is on Sunday, and we you know, it's interesting that we're having the conversation now, because, you know, this interview was scheduled like over a month ago. It's like it's perfectly ordained for this moment going into Father's. I don't know if you scheduled it like that on purpose. I don't know.
Nope. I did not. I was just like, I need as much time to get ready as I possibly can.
Yeah. And you know, I say that because, like you said, it is very important, you know, that we take account, men, we take accountability of the position that we play. And that's why, like, when I look at the media, I see why we are under attack like we are. You know what I mean? And it's just that, because society, it's a spiritual attack against us. You know what I mean? And so that's why we have to push. That's why everybody has to be working in their genius to inspire someone else. Yes. It may be your influence of 30, 100, 1,000, 2,000.
Yes.
But if we can focus on operating in our greatness, you only have to inspire one. For that one to inspire another, because there are communities, committees, organizations that are waiting to be formed.
Yes.
Right? Like somebody is actually waiting on you to activate your greatness. Like you were born for them.
Yep. And they need you. My husband and I were at a breakfast one day, and he made a connection with the man right next to him. And he looked over at me. He said, "I'm going to buy their breakfast." I said, "Well, why are you going to do that?" And he said, "Well, just because they're so nice." I said, "Well, baby, they knew when they came out here that they were going to have breakfast. So they're ready to pay." I said, "You want to do something for some folks?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Start you a scholarship for 10 kids at a Title I school, a poor school." I said, "Go in there and tell the principal at the very beginning of the school year that you want to select 10 kids. I said, and inspire those students to compete for that scholarship all year. I said, but make it a scholarship that they like. If they want to play football, pay for them to play on a football team that they couldn't afford to pay for because their mamas can't do it. If they want to take violin lessons, pay for the violin lessons. I said, get you 10 students in one school and tell them by the end of the school year, the top 10 students are going to win this much money for whatever they want to do." I said, "You want to do something? Do that."
Yeah.
And he was like, "You know what? That makes a lot of sense." Because we don't have to be involved with single moms or single dads to make an impact and help them have some type of influence over their children. With us, it does take a village, and we can't wait for everybody else to do something in our community. We have to do something, you know, and there are just too many of us out here bitter without a dad. Mom can't be around like she wants to be around or needs to be around. She's angry. There's too much stress and tension amongst our people, and it's starting to show with our kids.
Yeah.
You know, our kids are very different than they used to be. Very different.
And they have access to so much more information, so much more temptation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They can access the world sitting right next to you.
Yeah. And they don't know what's real and what's not.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the pressures of social media. And so, you know, it's very, your message that you're embarking on is well needed. And so I'm just blessed. I'm just blessed. Now, did we miss anything? Because I'm just thinking of the book, The Journey. What was it something that we that I maybe missed that you want to get across that we didn't touch yet?
It's something that has to kind of do with what we were talking earlier about, you know, our community and circulating dollars in our community. And I will say that in doing this book, and I sought out a, I contracted an editor, and I'll never forget when I went to the, I forget the organization, but it was like the Editors Something International Association. I had like 300 people apply. Three of them were black. And I'll never forget one of the ladies, a white lady, she wrote to me and she said, I would love to edit your book, but she said, you need a black editor. She said, only a black editor is really going to be able to understand what you're saying. She said, I can fix your comma splices. She said, I could tell you that, you know, you got some run-on sentences or whatever. She said, but you need somebody who's going to understand the culture and the language. This is a white woman telling me this, right? Mm-hmm. So then I went on a quest to find, I'm like, how can I find a black editor? I don't know how to find no black editors. And I found one. Her name is Amber Williams. I interviewed a few, but it was something about Amber, the way she was communicating with me. She was like, okay, this right here is good. You're taking your time. This pacing is great. She said, you're grossing me out, but I got to read on because I like it. I said, that's it. It's her. From Amber, from that editor, to researching publishers and the history of publishers, right? The history of the top five. Looking at self-publishing companies and how self-publishing companies, how much money they make off of a self-published author, understanding ISBNs. I mean, I have done so much research. I never sought an agent. I don't intend to. You know, we talked about a couple of things before we started. This is my baby. It's my story. And nobody's going to tell me how to tell it. Nobody's going to say to me, oh, you need to change that because that won't sell. Somebody out there needs to see that just the way it is. I'm not concerned about how it's going to sell or how it's not. So I love that. I'm going to be self-published, but it's taken on a whole different meaning for me. I found a printer who's going to print my books. I've purchased 500 ISBNs. My next book is The Stories Fathers Can't Tell. And it's about fathers that have gone through the judicial system for their kids and things that have happened with them just to try to be a dad. I told my best friend, I said, yeah, this is going to be a self-published book, but we're going to go ahead and do our own imprint. So it's going to be, I'll find as many people who want to tell their stories as possible, teach them how to go through the process, and just start to hear voices that we don't normally hear, you know?
Yeah. That, you know what? That's powerful because, you know, I've had a lot of, I can't say a lot, but I've had felons on my show, right? And, you know, they've talked about the struggle of coming home, finding a job. Yeah. And you know, a lot of them started trucking companies. And so they had to learn about so many different industries. And that's one of the reasons I'm passionate about this show, because it gives a different perspective and it opened people's mind up. And I want to build that community like what you're talking about. And that's why I said before the interview, I think it was before the interview, that this is only the beginning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That this is only the beginning because, like you said, that village is just going to expand. Yeah. And so as you expand that vision, you're coming back and right. We're going to have more people getting involved, telling their stories and inspiring people. And it's going to be like, how do you guys know each other?
Right.
You remember back in 2021, we did this interview and right. 10 years later,
absolutely,
we're still together having an impact.
Yeah. And that's how our people are made. And that's what we need to get back to, you know? Yeah. So it's been real. I've loved every moment of it. every moment of it. I've looked forward to it for weeks now. Like you said, it was not months ago. I was like, this is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
I love the 17-year-old. I got to order one of those shirts.
Yeah, he's super busy. He's expanding different colors, and so he's working hard. That relationship started because I interviewed his dad, you know, and then he said, man, you got to interview my son. He got his own clothing, and then he sent me a few shirts, and so, you know, I make sure I have about a few different colors, and so it's just that flow.
That daddy.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And the funny and the interesting thing about it, you know, when I was interviewing him, because this show, once it comes out, will be episode 163.
Wow.
And so I interviewed, thank you. I appreciate that. So I interviewed him around 2025, episode 25. And yeah. So, you know, it's great to see the journey. And one of the things he said during the interview, I said, hey, what motivates you to be so young and to keep going? Mm-hmm. He said, well, it's a couple things, but of course, it's my pops.
Daddy.
You know?
Ooh, yes.
And so that was the first thing he said. And at this time, I was doing IG Lives. Okay. And his dad wrote in the comments, this is a proud moment for me.
Yeah.
Those type of moments, you know, what it did for me. So, you know, it just motivated me to keep going, to see things like that, the father son exchange, yeah. You know? So.
I'm daddy.
Awesome. So now let people know where they can go to follow you on social media. So that way they can follow the journey, order the book when the pre-orders. Just let people know how they can get involved to follow and support you.
Absolutely. Well, my Instagram is Misha's Time. So that's time is spelled with like the food, like the season, because I love to cook. So it's just MISHATHYME. So that's my IG, that's my Facebook, and my website is mishastime.com. I'm starting kind of writing as therapy for people who want to learn how to express themselves more through writing, so they can sign up on my website to be a part of that. I'll send out writing prompts, and if it's really, really, really good, I'll post them on my website and everything, and just get people more involved with how writing captures who you are. You know, you look at it 10 years down the line, like, I wrote that? I still have my journal from when I started dating my husband. I was like, ooh. So, but writing is my thing. I love it. You can follow me on Misha's Time. Facebook, Instagram. I'm even on TikTok. I do a couple of things on TikTok. I kind of like TikTok a little bit. Yeah, I get a little creative, get a little crazy.
Yeah, so. I seen some. I think it was one where your son was feeding you the noodles, and then like, because you're very animated, right? And I love it. And so TikTok works great because it's like you're animated, and so I'm excited to keep following the TikTok journey.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to us, you know, following each other, supporting each other, you know, working with each other. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next 200, 261, 300, 400. I love what you're doing. I really, really
thank you.
And thank you for introducing me to the t-shirt, because as soon as you came on, I was like, what's up with that t-shirt? I gotta get that t-shirt.
I appreciate that. And now I always like to end on a word of encouragement. So before we go, I know you shared a lot tonight, but before we go, if you can share that last couple words of inspiration to inspire people to get started, whatever that journey may be for them, we'll end on your words of inspiration.
Okay. I would say that in order to be truly, truly happy, as hard as it may be, you have to be very, very honest. Even if it's not with everybody else, you start being honest with yourself. And you will just watch how free you become and how much happier you are, when you love who you are, no matter what you are, and just find your tribe.
You heard it here first. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Peace, love, and blessings. And everybody, we are out. Peace.
Peace.